This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Get comfortable being uncomfortable.
It's time for Ben's Vision.
Our mission starting this spring is to win and to win now.
Projecting how the Bears roster will take shape under new head coach Ben Johnson.
Ben's vision is going to be principle.
These are the type of players that I need. That's the vision.
If it doesn't fit Ben's vision, are you willing to move on from certain guys?
Really enjoy hearing Ben's vision.
Current roster, free agents, and the draft.
Our entire organization is fired up about Ben Johnson and his vision for winning football.
Ben's vision.
This offense will be calibrated with Caleb in mind. This is not simply a dropping of a previous playbook down on the table and starting there. Nope, we're ripping this thing down to the studs and we're going to build it up with him first and foremost and then with the pieces around him next.
With Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
As the offseason goes on, we are looking at individual players, we are looking at position groups, we are looking at the position itself to see if the Bears already have on the roster what Ben Johnson's vision for the roster might be.
And if it's not, what is the profile of somebody that Ben Johnson and Ryan Poles will grab to fill that spot? And let's talk center, a position at which the Bears have failed miserably for many years now, and failing to assign assets to it, thinking that people who are just kind of familiar with the scheme could come in and do. The guy from Green Bay, Luke Getsy, brought in and thought he would just be fine, Lucas Patrick, and that didn't work out. And then wanting Ryan Bates and targeting that, to letting Cody Whitehair be there when he couldn't snap out a shotgun and everybody knew it.
And Sam Mustipher has turned into a serviceable NFL offensive lineman.
Max Rustifer.
Him too.
That's how much the other host valued the offensive line.
Well, I that's not fair to Danny.
That's my job.
Danny values offensive line. He just, you know, sometimes you transfix numbers and names and letters and stuff.
I don't know if he values offensive line, but that's for another time.
That's for another topic for another day.
Yes.
Someone who does is we're lucky. Like we might be, as far as radio stations across the country,
yeah,
might be the most lucky or the luckiest when it comes to, we have people who can actually intelligently talk about offensive line
play. Thank you, Lawrence. I'm so glad.
Oh, by the way, during the break, a bunch of people hit me up.
What?
Studs wanted me to tell you that he also played center in high school and he'd be better than you.
What? I'm not worried about that.
And
Studs went to a high school for people under 120 pounds only.
Definitely considering. And then Porth, I asked Porth if he played center in high school.
I'll demolish
and,
him.
And he was like, oh, not in football, but in basketball. And I was like, that's good enough. It's good enough.
And Dustin, of course.
And Dustin played.
Yeah.
So you got a long list of people that
I'm dropping
down. We
got to
put you through the skills challenge.
I'm fine. I'm ready. Let's have a center combine. Now, that sounds like awesome March radio,
why
Mr.
not?
Man. But no, you're right. Olin Kreutz, one of the best to ever play the position, a guy who ought to be in the NFL Hall of Fame, talked to us about the center and quarterback relationship. They're both knowledge acquisition positions. They have to work together. Here's Olin on how the dynamic is supposed to go.
When you play center, the processing information with the quarterback, you're in conjunction with controlling the whole offensive line. You're almost like an air traffic controller out there on the football field, telling guys who to block, telling guys who may be blitzing, changing protection schemes, communicating with your quarterback on the sideline, on the field, getting things organized so you don't have free runners at your quarterback, especially a young rookie quarterback. But it all depends on how much the quarterback can do. It all depends on how much information he can process, how good he is at that in the pocket. I always tell guys, watch quarterbacks on third down. If they're standing there staring straight ahead, you got a problem. Right, they have to be walking to the line of scrimmage, communicating with the offensive line, letting guys know who may be coming, who may not be coming. The quarterback's first job is to protect himself. That's his first job, is to organize the protection, get guys on the right guys, tell the guys who may be blitzing, tell a quarterback who may be hot. These are things that they have to get together. So as far as the center position, shoving a guy over, all depends how good your quarterback is. When I was in Chicago, I had free reign to change protections, to slide lines different ways, to make corrections in what the quarterback may be doing, because everybody knows the quarterback. Quarterbacks I play with.
I think as a football nation, we've all gotten hip to how important the center is. And that protection element, stuff that Olin's talking about, is the reason why. That guy and the quarterback have got to be aligned. They have to know. They have to know when and how many times did we see free runners this year against Caleb Williams. Now, that's something that he'll learn, and he'll learn that he is part of the protection. And I keep having to remind myself that we need to talk about it as the protection and not necessarily the offensive line, because the protection has everyone involved in it, including the quarterback.
Absolutely. And you know what was super instructive to this is our conversation with Nick Allegretti the week of the Super Bowl, who talked about his former quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, being unbelievably great every play, every season, in terms of diagnosing protections and calling that out. And then Jaden Daniels, who as a rookie did not do it until towards the end of the season when he got better at it. But it was the center who did that. And then take yourself back visually to last year, how many times you saw Coleman Shelton being the guy calling out the protections. And Caleb was trying to at times, but it was a lot that he was being asked to do by a very poor coaching staff.
Yeah, that's the thing that it becomes, as we get farther away from it, it becomes more and more difficult to forgive the fact that all of that stuff happened to Caleb Williams
in
the first year.
Here's Ben Johnson talking about all the sacks that Caleb took. 68 sacks?
68
sacks for Caleb Johnson. Were they each a specific occurrence or not, Ben?
Listen, it's not just the guys up front, but really, he needs as strong of a supporting cast as we can possibly find for him. The guys up front, you can talk about the sacks and whether that was that unit, whether that was Caleb, whether that was the pass catcher. It's really a combination of all of them. And so any sack is really should be taken the onus by the entire unit. And so we do need to get better up front, better, I should say, more consistent play up front. That's probably the best way of phrasing it, because I'm not saying that we need to replace each and every guy that played snaps last year. That is not the case whatsoever. But we do need that unit to play at a higher level, more consistent level over the course of the year. So that'll be a point of emphasis. Feel really good about the O-line coaches we're going to have in that room going forward. Dan Roschar has a lot of skins on the wall. He was in New Orleans for a number of years, and they were absolutely cooking with Sean Payton back in the day. So I'm really excited about seeing him get to work.
I'm really happy that Ben Johnson saw on the tape what we all lived through. So you can have all of your rankings that you want. I'm glad that the head coach is like, nah, this is not going to be good enough for what it is that we want to do. And there might be individual players that can fit and can work, but as a unit, that there needs to be significant change. And that center position is so extremely critical. It sets everything up. It allows for there to be a level of comfort when the quarterback knows, like, in case I miss it, in case I miss identifying where a free runner is coming from or where protection needs to slide to, I know that the guy in front of me is not going to miss it. and is going to give us the best chance for the rep to work.
Absolutely.
Why don't we take the example of what happened in Detroit?
We always try to look at what Ben Johnson had the last 3 years in Detroit, and he had a first-round draft pick from 2018 named Frank Ragnow, who has been the second-team All-Pro center in each of the last two seasons in the NFL. Second-team All-Pro. He's 6'5". He's 311 pounds, and he's mean as all hell. Dan Campbell was talking about what makes him truly elite.
Every day of the week to prepare, when we have special teams meetings, we have our team meeting, then we go special teams, and during that time, the O-line and golf and the backs come upstairs, and we go over all the blitz looks, and, you know, we've kind of got our whole big screen there, and we go over all of it, and so you're already working through those, and you're working through your base rules, this is what we need to do, this, if we happen to get this look, blah, blah. So they go through that, and it's imperative that Frank and he are on the same page and that they understand there could be these very few looks that haven't shown up since week two. We may need to be ready. If it is, it's a rule breaker and we got to do this with it. And that's not easy. Frank loves that stuff, right? There's some guys that get a lot of anxiety over that. And Frank is not that way. Like, Frank loves that, right? He loves to be tested in that regard. And so, man, to have those guys on the same page, I mean, it means everything to her, especially when you throw it like we're throwing it. I mean, it's everything to your pass game, and it's another one of those reasons why we were able to keep him upright yesterday. So Frank prides himself on the mental side of the game. Not only that, protection, but the run game. Like, he wants to give me the game plan, give it to me early. You know, he's, like, many times we hadn't got it spit out yet, and it's, you know, whatever, 4:30 in the morning, you know, and he's on one of our young coaches to, hey, I need this thing now. He prides himself in it, and it's one of the reasons why he's arguably the best center in the league. He is the best center in the league, in my opinion.
So you got him, and then you got Penei Sewell out there.
That'll work.
That's a great way to start. So who do you target if you're the Bears?
Well, Drew Dahlman is the big-time free agent center. It's not a great year for centers. Drew Dahlman of the Atlanta Falcons didn't allow a single pressure in college as a senior at Stanford. The fourth-best center in the NFL as of right now, as ranked by Pro Football Focus, probably going to get about $15 million per year.
And doesn't seem to want to leave Atlanta.
Right. According to Orlando Ledbetter, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution doesn't want to leave. But that's like, I mean, do you spend for that guy? Missed 8 games last year with an ankle, missed 3 games in 2023. You now can't spend for Trey Smith, more than likely, as he was told he's going to be tagged by the Chiefs.
I guess the question kind of becomes, do you overspend? Is this someone, is he good enough at a position of need that it's okay if you overspend?
And yeah, I think that's the key question, because the other part of it is, do you put a rookie center with your second-year quarterback who you are retraining to do everything in a brand-new offense?
There's an argument for it, Spiegs, and the argument is they will learn together.
I know.
But I would prefer...
Don't you want him? I want him to have a veteran security blanket. I kind of do.
I would prefer someone who understands all of it already and can help in the learning for Caleb.
It actually, it makes me think about Coleman Shelton a little more, because he's good at that part of it. And Olin said he was good at that part of it, at the knowledge processing or the information processing. It's just not strong, nor necessarily a great puller on running plays or those kind of things. But he graded out okay, actually.
If only we had someone that we could talk to about this very thing.
About being a center for like a good young quarterback in year one and maybe year two, is trying to figure it out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but that's a weird comp to find.
No, I think we nailed it. If you check the Circus Sports Illinois hotline, Max Unger is now on it.
Let's take a look at the Seattle starters.
Russell Wilson from a whole pack of Badgers.
Marshawn Lynch, Oakland, Ice City, California.
Max Unger, Oregon.
The bench is empty, and arguably the best team in pro football all season has shown it again. They are NFL champions. The Seattle Seahawks have won Super Bowl 48, beating Manning and the Denver Broncos 43-8.
The Seahawks will host the NFC Championship.
Here's Lynch. Marshawn Lynch. He's thrown. Touchdown.
Well, Max Unger and James Carpenter, you watch
watch them double team the tackle and then work up to Clay Matthews. That creates the lane and the blocking down the field by Lockett. With one timeout and plenty of time, the Seahawks did not have to divert from what they wanted to do offensively. They hand the ball to Lynch. Just an excellent job of finishing off that drive.
Here's the snap. Wilson looking, lofts it deep over the middle, over the shoulder, catch is made. Touchdown. Game over. And this championship game goes to Seattle. And let's take a look at the NFC offensive starters.
Max Unger, Oregon.
What a thrill for him. He grew up in Hawaii on the Big Island of Hawaii.
Here we go, fellas. Max Unger has an All-Pro, has a Super Bowl, played in some Pro Bowls as well, and he joins us now on the Spiegel and Home Show. Max, first thing, do they just grow centers in Hawaii? Because we have Olin Krutz on our show once a week, obviously Dominic Raiola as well, and you too. What are y'all doing out there on the island where you just keep growing centers?
Oh, man, that's funny. I was just going to say, you don't need to have me on, man. You got your boy Olin in your backyard. But no, there is a good tradition of playing kind of interior O-line, out here in Hawaii. But, yeah, man, you guys have probably the best one ever in Olin that you get to talk to all the time, which is pretty cool. So,
but we need to figure out from you, Max, and thanks for joining us, like, what's the best fit for young Caleb Williams? Year two for Caleb was really going to be, it's going to have a lot of year one tendencies because he's got a brand new offensive head coach, brand new brain trust, probably a brand new center. So you had Russell Wilson as a rookie and in year two, right? So what was important to that relationship? What did you bring to it? And does Caleb need, or does he need what you gave to Russell?
Yeah, so I actually have like quite a bit of familiarity with your new staff that comes in, right? So Roshar coached me in New Orleans, right? And so I have a good idea of what he's going to do. Devan was a peer of mine. He played at Oregon State. He also coached me in New Orleans. And then Zach Cable, who's Tom Cable's son, is quality control there, right? And so, you know, the system that those three guys ish, you know, Dan in particular, going to bring in. He is a good coach at finding out what, you know, Caleb's going to need, right? And so at the end of the day, you know, you're trying to eliminate as many things as you can for a young quarterback to be successful, right? Half field reads, don't mic the run game, right? All the checks, all the kills, all the alerts, have the O-line do that. And so it kind of allows the quarterbacks to really worry about what, you know, they need to worry about. That's redirecting protection and completing passes, you know, hopefully for half the field, right? And so that was our thing with Russ when we came in. We ran the ball really well, you know, in, I think, what was that, 2012? You know, we ran the ball and we were able to mic almost everything, and he overrode it all with, you know, his protection and stuff like that. So, you know, if you can kind of start there, I think that you're going to kind of be in a good place, right?
That would be awesome if that's the case. Like, when it comes to the spending of time quarterback and center, how much do you think that should happen? Does it need to happen, or is the positional coaching in both places, quarterback and offensive line, good enough, or do you have to bond with your quarterback?
Yeah, I think it helps, you know, you see offensive lines that, you know, they don't string all five starters together for a season, right? And you kind of see what happens, you know, when that takes place. And you see groups that are able to play, you know, all five guys for the majority of the whole season. And when you're able to do that, it really brings, you know, like the tackles, the centers, and the guards that are able to help the quarterback at the same time, right? I mean, if you have a tackle that can check out the slot and, like, see safeties that are wide and there's potential pressure out there and he can let the quarterback know, it's huge, right? But that takes reps, it takes time. And so I guess the biggest concern is having stability, you know, a core group that can really help Caleb out.
So did you say that Russell overrode it all? Like that Russell, was he smart enough to take over at some point during the rookie year? And when was that?
Yeah, so what we did, so we, you know, break the huddle, go up to the line, the center mics the mic, right? Or, you know, whoever we're going to in protection or in the run game, right? And so at any point, he could override that. But, you know, what we were doing is just taking as much off of his plate as we needed to, right? So we could redirect protection. You know, we could mic the mic in the run game, but at any point he wanted to mic somebody else or he saw something that we didn't, he would override it, right? And so later on, I think maybe second, third year, I think that changed, but we kind of kept that going for a long time. And that was, it was massively, massively beneficial for him just because he didn't have to worry about it, right? You know, as much as we could do that, you know, took stuff that he didn't have to worry about off, it was successful, so.
Got you. So could a rookie center that they draft, Bears have three picks in the top 41, and we're talking to Max Unger, longtime NFL center, yeah, and member of the Seattle Seahawks when Russ was a rookie and beyond. Could a rookie center do what you're describing for Caleb Williams?
Truthfully, it'll be pretty tough. Yeah. Could he? Absolutely. He would have to rely pretty heavily on some of the more vets in the room. It would be difficult, though. That's the short answer to it. It happens all the time, and it just takes familiarity with the offense. You know, this being a new offense that you guys have coming in that you're going to be installing, it probably won't be as insurmountable as like some like New Orleans where, you know, Sean and Drew had been together for 16 years. You know, trying to come in and learn that is a lot more difficult than everybody learning the same offense, you know, starting with, you know, the offseason program.
What's important to Dan Roschar?
Dan? Oh, that's my guy. What's important for him? I mean, this is a true pro coach, right? You know, this is a guy that's spent, I don't even know how long he's coached in the NFL. It's a long time. What's important for him is details, right? He's going to keep these guys in the meeting room for a long time and make sure that you're prepared. I know for a fact that this group will not go into an NFL game unprepared, right? He'll cover everything. And it's just it's a classic pro coach, right? Handle your business, be tough, be physical, and don't have mental mistakes, right? Everything else can be tolerated, you know, except for mental mistakes. So. You guys have a good coach coming in, and if anybody, you know, any coaches in the league, any O-line coaches, you know, out there, I mean, I don't think that there's any, you know, better than him. So,
Max, have you watched any of Caleb Williams play?
I did. You know, I very casually watched the NFL. I mean, you guys started off, you know, really well, had a kind of a tough slide there at the end, but I mean, he has the things that, you know, it's going to take to win. So,
what are you seeing when you see him?
I think he, it's like he has all the tools, right? And it's the best teams in the NFL, obviously the ones with the best quarterbacks, right? I mean, there's exceptions to that. But at the end of the day, you're going to have a guy that can make the throws that need to be made when they need to be made, right? And he showed that he could do that. And I think it's just kind of, you know, you look at any young quarterback in the NFL, there's going to be pretty tough challenges. But I think the encouraging part is that you saw things that, the successful quarterbacks have that he does too. So
there's a couple free agent centers to think about. One is Drew Dahlman from Atlanta, who may not leave there. Another is Coleman Shelton, who was just here. And another is Ryan Kelly in Indianapolis, the former Colts, maybe soon to be former Colts center. Any thoughts on any of those three guys? I don't know if the center community has like a text thread where you guys all stay in touch. Stuff.
No, you know, I don't, man. I didn't know who was going to be free agents or, you know, what the deal is. Sorry, man. I'm not familiar. Good. I don't know any of those guys personally.
Well, let me tell you about this then. In December of 2012, when you and the Seahawks came into Soldier Field, Russell Wilson and you guys just beat the bejesus out of the Bears. It was really disappointing, but it made us sing a Christmas classic that remains a hit to this day.
Russell Wilson looked like an all-pro.
Like, we were shocked how good Russell Wilson looked that day. 9 carries for 71 yards for Russell Wilson in the run game that day. 293 passing. You had it cooking that day. Was that all Russ? Was that all you? Who was doing
that? So we played there, I think,
overtime.
3 years in a row.
That's the overtime game.
That was the overtime game?
Yep.
Was that Sidney Rice? I think Sidney Rice caught one. So that was kind of the first time that we ran, you know, classic read option football, right? Because no one was really doing that, right?
Yes, sir.
And so we got this rookie quarterback and we're like, hey, let's just run some good old fashioned read option. And the defenses in the NFL at that point hadn't really caught up to it. Right. And so it was a little bit of a, you know, curveball. We didn't specialize in that, but Russ is obviously a special player, and he was able to do some stuff, man. That was, I do remember that game though.
Max, are you excited that last year we saw a whole bunch of duo blocks come back to the league?
Dude, duo, that's Drew calls that America's play. I mean, it's so funny. You see somebody get, you know, put the two tight ends on the same side or put a fullback over there, and here it comes, sure enough. It's funny, you know, there were teams that didn't really run that play, you know, 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. But, I mean, I think that's the number one run in the league right now, isn't it? I mean, that's some good stuff right there.
So it's funny that you say that because Olin calls it God's play.
Well, so I mean, there's a theory to this, right? I mean, you look at the numbers that quarterbacks are putting up now; they're just lower, right? And they've been lower, and we got these exotic coverages on the back end, right? And so, if you can line up and you can get, you know, 3.5, 4 yards on first down with, you know, in 21 or 12, you're like way ahead of the chains. And I think if you want to play those crazy coverages, you have a harder time stopping like full-blown man scheme straight at you. So it makes sense as to why God's play is having a resurgence right now.
Oh man, you know what, after the Bears get their center, whoever they decide it's going to be, we got to call you back and talk to you again, Max. This was crazy fun.
All right, guys, thanks for having me, man. Take care.
You too. That is Max Unger, who won a Super Bowl. The irony, by the way, of you and Shep with that song.
Yeah,
Russell Wilson never an All-Pro.
Well, how about that? And you remember at the time, like, all of us going, like, why does he look so good? And that's because, like Max said, they sprung the zone read on the entire league. And the league didn't know what the hell to do, starting with the Bears on that day.
Centers are awesome, man.
Thank you.
Centers.
I agree.
I mean, you're part of the club, I guess.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're still low on the rankings.
Man.
That's all right, though. You're high in the rankings when it comes to talking baseball. You're a baseball guy here at the Score.
It doesn't make me feel any better.
It should, because okay, we're going to do a baseball segment next about the Cubs, and you are Mr. Cub.
Yeah, we got to figure
this. Well, you're not Mr. Cub. That's Ernie Banks.
let's play two segments on the Cubs.
You're Mr. Cubs Talk.
Yeah.
We should put that on the shirt.
Maybe I'll get a statue. We got to figure out who's going to start at second and third for the Cubs when the league opens.
Wait, what?
Which is really soon.
All right, let's get into that next here on The Score.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Spiegel and Holmes show flashback.
Doing well. Good bit into my throwing program and such. Still got no dates or big fancy announcements or things like that, but moving along well and making good progress. I think best way to put it is like a couple months ago or like when I got surgery. Like if you were to tell me I am where I am on February 18th, I'd be really happy with it. So I'm in a good spot.
Yeah, we need to talk about some of the injuries on the Cubs infield. By the way, keep listening for your chance to win your way into our Cubs season opener watch and listen party with Mully and Haw at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. Be a part of a studio audience for Cubs v. Dodgers in Tokyo starting at 5 a.m. on March 18th. Then stick around for a special broadcast of Mully and Haw after the conclusion of the Cubs. I've never thought about the idea that they would have to wait until post-game.
Yeah, man.
They're very excited, I think.
I'm sure they are.
they've mentioned a couple times. Yeah.
They don't get this chance.
I'm sure they're ecstatic about
it. It's one of the great joys in life, guys. Enjoy.
Post-game in the morning. Post-game in the morning.
No one deserves it more.
Yeah.
That is awesome. That is really, really great. So stay listening to us here. And I forgot the call-in number, Shane. What is it? What's the call-in number?
It is 312-540-0670.
And then when you hear this,
Ian Anderson, boy, he could play that flute.
Really could.
That's when you call in. By the way, this hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
So I don't know if people can remember all the way back to April of 2023, but the Cubs had to figure things out in right field because Seiya Suzuki had an oblique injury, and he wasn't ready for opening day. And in the month of April, the Cubs got horrendous defense in right field from Trey Mancini, who made a terrible play one time trying to dive for a ball when they were up 2-0, let 2 runs scored.
Yeah.
You remember that play?
I do.
Miles Mastroboni was out there, like a guy that Jed Hoyer just thought, well, he could be a utility guy, and he could not be a utility guy. Decent defensive third baseman, survivable at short, but get him away from the outfield, and they eventually did. And there were others. It was a debacle in right field as they waited for Seiya Suzuki to heal. And then there was last year when the closer situation was a problem and Adbert was bad. And I find myself really worried about the first few weeks of the season and these Japan games without Nico Hoerner at second base, which we got confirmation on today from Jesse Rogers that Nico Hoerner is not going to be going to Japan.
And we kind of thought that because I remember when you kind of officially introduced me to Nico on the show.
At the convention.
And we were like, how's your hand? He's like, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. How's your flexor tendon?
It's, like, yeah.
It's true. We didn't want to, like, you know, and then we had some suspicions. But now there's no Nico, and there might not be Matt Shaw. I dismissed it yesterday when you brought it up, because when I was out there, I'd heard, oh, no, Shaw'll be back. Everything's going to be fine.
It's kind of weird, and we'll get more of an update from Bruce in a few minutes on it, but it seemed like every one of the Cubs was like, no, he's going to be okay. And then it felt like things were worse. And now it's back to
maybe okay.
He's going to maybe play some games this weekend.
Yeah, Craig Counsell said could be his first game this weekend. And if that's the case, then maybe he'll be fine
but
for that Japan trip.
This is the worst sport for an oblique injury. It just is, because of what you need your body to do.
The swings,
the way that your body bends when you're trying to feel, like all of this stuff. I always get scared whenever I hear a baseball player is dealing with an oblique and without like a significant amount of time off.
So if the Cubs hit opening day and third base is John Birdie and second base is Nicky Lopez, you know, I feel good about those guys at the bottom of my roster in a general sense. And I've been saying that I feel good about at-bats like that for men number 24 and 25, as opposed to the Madrigals and Mastrobonis of the world. But greeting opening day with those two, how are Cub fans going to feel? I'll tell you that I'll feel fine defensively.
When's the last time Justin Turner played third?
He's got a glove now. It's been a while. I don't think he.
He said yesterday that he was stretching his arm out in the event that he would have to play third.
I think he's going to.
You
have
think Justin
to play
Turner
third.
Might be your opening day third baseman? I don't know.
That's what I. If I was betting, that's what I'd bet.
Nicky Lopez at third. Move Michael Bush over to second, his natural position, and put Justin Turner at first.
We haven't seen Michael Bush play an inning anywhere other than first base, and I'm not exactly sure why. Maybe they just don't want to ask him to do it, Shane.
He just had a bad moment in the game that's on right now, too, by the way.
Well, that was him and Jordan Wicks, right?
Yeah, them like going around, doing figure eights around each other while there's a play at first.
We haven't seen any sort of flexibility like that be asked of Michael Bush. And that's it's interesting to me that they haven't bothered to go down that path.
Do you want to ask Bruce about this?
I really, really do.
Okay, well, you can ask him. I'm not speaking to him.
You can ask. We're going to get you guys together. By the end of the segment, the love will be back.
I predict. You know, the weirdest thing is that he's like one of my favorite people in our business.
Doesn't sound like it.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
Something happened between you two.
He started it.
I think you're taking it very personally.
Hey, man, that's what I do. That's my bit.
Again, the bits are also our actual personalities.
100%. I'm not walking away from that.
Good vibes, babe.
Good vibes, babe. with Maddie Matt and the Funky Bunch here on The Score.
Who's your favorite rock star?
Your Prince voice.
Bruce.
Prince.
Bruce.
Bruce Levine.
Just had a text from Bruce Levine.
Hi, Bruce.
Noted baseball aficionado. Been around town for a long time.
Score Baseball Insider.
Bruce, I really do appreciate the way you communicate up front, transparent, direct. And you've been doing it for years. Happy to come on your show anytime. It doesn't matter if you're in Chicago or New York or L.A. or whatever. Like, I enjoy talking to you. And Matt, it was good to talk to you today.
Thanks, Gabe.
Covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Can I ask you a question about that?
I'm going to go through my speech.
Yes, sir.
Take a look at it.
With the idea that...
And the essence of Bellinger. I think every team wants it on their vanity. Bruce, you step on my lines once more. I'm telling you, you're the back of the group.
Bruce Levine.
Spiegel guy.
What's his first name?
With Spiegel and Holmes.
Is that your station?
I don't know.
On 670 The Score.
Joining us now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline is Bruce Levine. Download the Circa app today.
Hello, Bruce.
Hello, Bruce.
Hello, guys. How's everything going in Chicago?
I was doing fine. I was on vacation, and I get back, and I hear, hey, you know, Bruce didn't shout you out with counsel during the conversation about the show. And I was like, not my guy that I would consider a mentor.
Did they play the tape for you?
They did.
Okay.
I know.
What did I tell counsel?
Well, we could play it again.
You said.
Oh, no, we lost.
Right?
What's up, Bruce? You're breaking up a little bit. Say that again,
sir. Say it again.
I said it's Lawrence Holmes, right? Along with Speaks.
I don't think we heard that part of it, Bruce.
He might have said that part
of
it.
Yeah, maybe we just didn't have that part of it.
I did.
All right.
I said, do not call him Larry. Do not call him Larry.
So that's where counsel got it from, not from his old days of listening to the station. All is forgiven.
Because when I talked to counsel a couple days after that, he said, yeah, don't call me Larry. He got that from you, Bruce Levine.
Yes.
All right, then
we're trying to keep him straight.
Good. Keep him straight, Bruce. Him straight. Now I'm back on Team Levine.
Right.
Now we're back, baby.
Right. Thank you.
Cuz I mean cuz I talk
so
with Bruce
easy to get canceled.
I talk
I've
with Bruce so much
so many
about
times on our own station.
I know, but I mean, look, you and I have had countless conversations about the manager's show and how you like how I've done the manager's show with the previous two managers. So that's all.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any question about that. No, I try not to run afoul of any teammates, but you know, as your as you do your journalism thing and your reporting thing, some people are just not going to like you and your stuff. That's just the way it is.
That's just the way it goes. And then as we do our score thing, as you know, Bruce.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm still treated like I'm working at ESPN. You know, it's no different. You know, it's like that guy down the dial. Oh, by the way, he does his show here on Saturday. Yeah, that's me.
No.
See, it's fun.
I love the challenges of Chicago radio. It's one of the great gifts that I've had in my life. I'm sure you guys feel no different.
I think that he's right, and I think we didn't do our journalism thing.
Maybe we didn't.
Maybe we did not.
We actually did our score thing. That's the problem.
He's right.
Yeah.
Bruce is right about all of that.
Understood,
so,
Bruce.
So, Bruce, why don't we add some journalism to the score stuff? What's going on with the Cubs infield as far as injuries go?
Yeah, so, you know, Matt Shaw is on his way to playing in his first Cactus League game on Sunday. He's been struggling since February 5th with an oblique issue. And, you know, as we know, as we've learned in baseball, obliques usually take 3 to 4 weeks minimum for them to clear them and be able to come back, whether it's a pitcher or a hitter and play. And so Shaw has been cleared. Fully cleared to go full out starting on Sunday. He'll be playing, and it's a big story moving forward because it's not just Matt Shaw, the Cubs third baseman. It's Matt Shaw, the rookie third baseman, that has to show he can handle the position. He's only had a year and a half in the minor leagues after being a number one pick, and you know, it's really. Sorry for the seventh inning stretch here. It's Kerry Wood on video, by the way. They have to figure out if he can handle the position. So the question next is, does he go to Japan where they're only going to play an exhibition game and two games in an 8 or 9 day period? Or does he stay back here and get reps and get ready for the real opening day, which entails 160 games rather than the two fun games in Japan?
Well, it's a good question, Bruce. Three strikes, you're out at the old ball game. So let's get some runs in Japan. And the way to do that with the bats might be different than the best way to get the defense at second base and third base. No Nico Horner for Japan. We know that today. Now, if there is no Matt Shaw, how do you suspect they line up at those two positions if you had to pin it down today?
Well, it's three guys, Bruhan, Workman, and Birdie. All new guys. Workman is a guy, a Rule 5 guy from Detroit. They got to keep him on the roster all year or offer him back to Detroit for, I think, it's $75,000. Got a big left-handed swing and has home run power. Can play second, third, right field. When we've talked to counsel, he said more about third base, meaning a left-handed bat at third. So it's likely to see him there. Birdie, you know, a veteran guy that's been a starter for many years with the Marlins. He's likely at second. Bruhan can play second, short, third. And then there's Nicky Lopez all the way around, too. Not a lot of those guys can play shortstop, except maybe Bruhan and Lopez. So there's a battle for three spots among those four guys and three spots as to how Council is going to pick out the second baseman and third baseman for the two Japanese games.
So Gage Workman, the former Tiger, the Rule 5 pick, and Vidal Bruhan, who's a 27-year-old middle infielder, fast guy they got from the Marlins when he was DFA'd down there. They traded Matt Mervis for him, jumped into the 10-day period to grab Bruhan. So that was a choice, and they gave up something to get it. That makes a lot of sense. Do you think Nicky Lopez makes this roster opening day, Bruce?
He's really the only shortstop. Let's say Swanson goes down for a week, right? I think Lopez can handle second, short, third for a week for anybody. He's a seasoned guy. He's not going to shake. I think that gives him a leg up on the others. Bruhan can play short, but I think Lopez is a better value there. He's not going to hit a lot. But he's going to add to your team, you know, a veteran that can go in there and play a position while your starter is out of the lineup. I don't think you're going to Nico Horner. He starts the season and then automatically just switch him to shortstop. So they're going to have a backup shortstop. And unless somebody from waivers is better than the guys they have right now, you know, toward the end of spring training around the 20th, 25th of March before the season starts, all of a sudden you see the Brewer, you know, the waiver wires working and you can pick somebody up that's better. That's pretty much the mix right now.
All right. Well, Bruce, we appreciate you keeping us updated and reminding us that we need to get the whole story before we go off half-cocked. We appreciate you, sir, and thank you very much.
Guys, have a great day.
Thanks, Bruce.
That's Bruce Levine.
Off the grudge list.
Yeah.
And back. Well, and he was on the guest list even while on the grudge list.
Now you're on it.
Yeah. Why?
You started this.
Somebody's always got to be on it. That's how it works.
It can't be
here.
Empty.
No, it can't be empty.
Can't be empty.
Grudge list not allowed to be empty.
Or else I can't live. You know?
Whatever fuels you, man.
Someone's got to do it. But it does seem like the right amount of days or games at third base for Justin Turner is zero.
I think, yeah, there's some options there. I got to Workman.
But it's nice to know that in some sort of freak emergency, Justin, go get your mitt and get us out of this game. You know what I mean? Like if something happens, you're like, we got to get everyone up out of here, then that's fine.
Yeah, I'm going to deem the situation better than the one 2 years ago in right field that freaked me out that I brought up last segment when Saya couldn't go. There's a pile of options who can actually play the position in terms of Workman and Bruhan and Nicky and Birdie. That's four.
It's so funny, too, because I when they got Nicky Lopez, I was like, I don't know if he's going to make this team.
Yeah, I wasn't sure either, but there is no backup shortstop.
There is none. It's a really good argument by Bruce. Let's take a break. When we come back, let's get back to talking football. NFL style. Should the league get rid of the tush push? And who's actually against this? We'll discuss that next on The Score.